17th floor, mountaineering department. Bruce Morser and Bob Horsley are on their way. They are about to ride the Continental Divide on gravel bikes from the Canadian to the Mexican border. And each week between now and the 1st of October, we're going to be following their progress with these segments on Voice of Vashon and also my Hoytus Interruptus podcast. Let's join the guys from the highway where they are heading east to get ready to start their ride. Bruce Morser, Bob Horsley, on the road! Where are you guys?
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
Good.
We are about, 30 miles east of Moses Lake. Another hour to go till we get to Spokane.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're not that far away just yet. You just left on the ferry earlier this morning. We're actually recording this segment about 6 days before it'll actually air. So by the time this airs, you will already be on the trail. Is that correct?
You know, in this though, we're not getting ourselves. We have no idea. We'll probably be to Spokane for sure, but maybe we'll be a couple days down the trail as well.
Okay, all right. So where are you spending the night tonight? Do you think Spokane?
Maybe somewhere on the other side of Spokane. Yeah. We haven't even decided that yet.
Okay. So you got on the ferry. You rode your bikes up to the north end. I understand.
We did. Yeah, we've got about maybe a total of like 16 miles under the belt today already, which is sort of actually maybe 1,000 vertical or something. 16 miles actually qualifies as kind of a ride today, which was not expected, but it was good.
Yeah, okay. We rode to the Burien, and then we rode from Fauntleroy over to the Burien U-Haul.
Yeah, and our wives Kathleen and Julie came to the North End Ferry with sweet rolls and cameras and well wishes. It was very, very, very supportive.
Oh, that was very nice. What supportive spouses you have.
Absolutely. I know. They've been incredibly supportive.
I was talking to them the other night, and I got the feeling they're both kind of looking forward to this.
I think it's a big part. Yeah, I can't say that. I actually asked Julie about it. I said, so is there some anticipation of having the house to yourself? everyone enjoys that feeling. So. that's probably good. But then she also admitted and said, I am going to miss you. And it was a touching moment.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you today about the tech that you've got your bikes, and we talked about that last week about how this is a really nice, comfortable bike that you're riding on, these gravel bikes. But you had to go out and get a lot of gear that's super lightweight and small, and I'm guessing fairly advanced for its time. The latest and greatest. Tell me about the gear that you're going to be very tightly packing onto your bike, the camping gear. What kind of things have you found different from the camping gear of yore that you're used to?
That's a good place to start, Jeff, because it's literally the first thing that would come to mind is that on my bike, I have latest and greatest, and we'll talk about that, all these neat new things and stoves and sleeping pads and all that kind of stuff. The tent itself is a really little miracle. But we are using some of our old bags from the cross-country trip, the frame bags that actually fit on the bike. Mm-hmm. In fact, I am using one of the bags I rode through Europe, a handlebar bag that I used through Europe back when I was 18 years old, and then reused that one for our cross-country trip. And now, again, 50 years later, it's back on the bike, is the handlebar position again, carrying all kinds of important stuff. So, yes, there's this really old sentimental quality, some old favorites. But, yeah, the new tech stuff is awesome.
And it's not so, the bags are a big piece of it. But the stuff that you put in the bags, that's where the technologies really come in. I sort of learned about a year ago, we went on a trip with a few folks, and trying to pack the bag with all the stuff that I had before, there was just nowhere to put it. Mm-hmm. And so that trip, I've been purchasing, little things like like a sleeping quilt instead of a bag.
Mm-hmm.
The pads and the tents that are half the size take up half the space, and that's what's really enabled us to get all this stuff into the bags. Really,
yeah, that's the trick. The day of panniers are really less popular now. The old sort of saddle bags on either side of your rear wheel is not that common, but now everything is kind of in line. Where both Bob and I have a rack on the back, and that on top of that rack we have different kinds of bags. I mean, it looks like I'm carrying an old doctor's valise on the back of mine, and then on top of that, sandwiched between that valise and the seat is the standard kind of butt cone that is popular with cross-country road riding. So it's all in line now, and which is good for wind resistance, and it's also easier kicking your leg over it and stuff like that.
Butt cone? Did you just say butt cone on the radio?
I did. Yeah. It's not the first time either. It's like a pineapple-shaped cone. It's a cone shape, and it's right under your tailbone, connected to the saddle.
To the seat post.
Yeah, and it's the standard now for carrying large shapes. And then, of course, we have triangular frame bags that fit within the main triangle of your bike frame, which holds an unbelievable amount of stuff. And stuff that's awkward, like all our painting gear, is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have little racks that go on the forks themselves. See, part of the trick of our bikes is they have so many different spots on the bike that where you can mount things. And that's what makes it more of a bike packing bike.
Right.
So even the front forks and the rear forks have these little cages on that you can strap packs on those too, kind of like a mini pannier.
Right. Cool. But,
there are so many cool things though in the, as Bob was saying, in the packs. Like I used to camp a lot, but I haven't much over the last couple of decades. Now I'm doing it again. And things like the idea that you would blow up your air mattress by, putting your face next to this thing, and 5 minutes later you're staggering around exhausted. And now you don't do that. You use kind of what looks like a pillowcase that grabs air, and then you squeeze that into your air mattress, which now they make them durable enough that I'm riding with an air mattress now, that and a regular sort of Insulite pad. So that's gone very high tech.
Wow. Okay. Well, it sounds like it's going to be you're going to be a walking endorsement for a lot of this gear. Do you have some of the food that you're going to be consuming on the trail yet, or are you going to just resupply when you get to Whitefish?
Yeah, no, we went ahead and purchased the food for basically 3 days, because we're going to be out 2 nights before we get to Whitefish again.
Mm-hmm.
So. And that's going to be sort of the trick of the whole trip. We're going to have to kind of think 3 or 4 days ahead of ourselves to make sure that we've got food covered.
It's a lot of like rice and beans, things that you add water. If you add dried beans, you put water in a bottle with beans in it, and then you ride all day long in the sun, it's ready to eat by the time you get to where you want to get to.
We're going
to
be eating very clean.
I guess so. So the plan is then to get to Whitefish. That's where you drop off the trailer.
Yeah, it's actually Columbia Falls, and then we're gonna, which is right next to Whitefish. And then there's a little outfit up there, a biking retreat where they do trips, but they also offer a shuttle service. So we're gonna have them pick us up in Columbia Falls, and they're gonna shuttle us up to the border, which is a little over 100 miles north.
Uh-huh.
So we don't. Sort of backtracking like that.
So you can pedal your way back.
What's that?
So you can pedal your way back.
Correct. Yeah. So we'll start then, and that's right now we're planning to do that the morning after tomorrow.
We'll reset our. Bob and I are both running with a different kind of GPS unit.
Right.
That helps us track. Now there are maps. These are teeny little devices, but there are maps within them. And then you actually have a track, it looks like a red line or a purple line on the map, and you have your position arrow, and we'll reset all of that stuff on the border and then head south and then let the confusion begin. It seems like it's pretty straightforward, but I'm sure we'll be wandering around in the woods a little bit.
Well, I mean, so this is the trick. It's not like we're going to be on roads where there'll be road signs. I think probably the biggest signage that we'll ever see is some of these roads may have little bitty tiny numbers that you have to really look hard for on the road edge every now and then. Those are logging roads. Those are fire roads, basically.
Right. And there's all the time, and we've done enough of this, that you get to these spots where all of a sudden there are five roads, meaning, you know, dirt paths that emanate from one location, and you have, like, I have no idea. The map shows two, there are five, where do you go?
Yeah.
And you don't want to spin your wheels on this kind of thing. So by having a GPS with a track on it already, something you actually purchased this track from Adventure Cycles, and then you can load it on your GPS, and then it gives you, you can tell pretty quickly if you're off track, and then it's easier to follow that you're on track that way.
Yeah. Will there be a voice going, return to route, return to route?
I think it does beep when you go off track.
Right, yeah. But most of the time, it's not like, it's not like ride with GPS, which is a common form. You can't have battery life long enough to use those kinds of programs. So this is pretty much monitor yourself. And if you want to go through and put all these, your own waypoints in, you can get it to beep. But most of the time, you just got to keep your eyes on it and realize, hey, what happened to the red line? Yeah. We haven't seen that for 30 miles. I wonder where it's gone.
I'm sure have more stories for you about our GPS as we go along.
Yeah.
There's a bear over there, critical, Bob. You'll know.
Critical data, you know.
I've always imagined this trip as being just a trail, and you follow the trail. So there's forks and junctures and turns and moments of decision along the way.
Yeah, this route was started like 25 years ago by Adventure Cycling, this group out of Missoula, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And they created the route just from, you know, people that were interested in putting together some sort of cross-country route that was off the road. And, it's just a series of, they vetted this over the years. They tried different trails, tried different roads. And this was after many years of trial and error and figuring out what works and what doesn't. And then after they sort of got it together and figured it out, they produced maps of it. And that's what, and then over the years, they've updated the maps each year or every 2 or 3 years to reflect road changes or better routes or changing conditions.
It's about 85% gravel roads, some pretty crude, very poor gravel roads, real jeep tracks, and about maybe 5% single track,
mm-hmm.
meaning, you know, literally you're looks like a hiking trail. You have to have a certain amount of skill just to ride down the thing. But that's probably only 5%. And then you actually get about, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10% of just your back on pavement.
Yeah.
But those roads are small. We it's funny, riding to the U-Haul place today, it was this feeling of like, I don't want to be out here with the car. We're going in the right direction. Yeah, let's get away from this.
So the start point, the official start point at the Canadian border, is that Triple Peak?
Roseville. Ille. I don't know how big it is. I don't know anything about it. I remember seeing the name.
Yeah. And is there a sign? Is there a sign there so you can take a nice photograph? And
I'm sure there'll be a gate.
There's a border crossing.
Yeah,
there.
Border crossing. Yeah.
Oh, okay. There's an official border crossing. All right. Cool.
If the border guard will let us put like half a rear tire over the border.
Yeah. Produce a passport.
I'm not too hopeful about that.
So as in the last days before you took off, did you have any interesting advice or parting words from any friends and family beyond just, you know, Julie and Kathleen?
Lions and tigers and bears, Jeff.
There's some concern about that, I guess.
The thing that's interesting is you know it's coming. You know that everybody is going to ask you about bears. But you sort of can tell something about somebody by, are they just right in your grill right away, like, what about bears? Or do they kind of fish around and back and fill, and then eventually, like, are you worried about bears? So there's a lot of that. Although my daughter did admit, she said, I'm not that worried about bears. what I'm really worried about for you are snakes. So I was like, okay, that's fine.
Snakes.
I'm glad everybody is worrying about us.
We're not
spending a lot of time worrying about this. It's something that we're going to obviously experience, and we just use our best.
The thing, and the thing that had my, I think Bob and I both share this, and we're looking ahead. The trouble spots that we see are fire potential.
Uh-huh.
There's a wildland fire right now, and we could simply meet some pickup truck ranger out there who just says, you're done. Yeah, it's over. Go away.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Or as we get further south, there's quite a drought going on, and sources of water are going to be harder and harder to get to. And you certainly read the account that a lot of riders go from cattle trough to cattle trough and filter the water. So yeah. I'm sure it will be part of that parade.
Yeah.
And you have good filters, and you're prepared for all that.
Yeah, we've got two different types of water filters, and we've got iodine tablets.
And I get Bob to take a glass first and see what happens.
Well, it's such an adventure. To me, it seems like the biggest obstacle. I mean, wildfires, bears, okay, that's all there. But the physical challenge of this particular trip is perhaps the thing that you will, you'll probably know pretty soon, pretty early on. Yeah, we're up to this. This is in our wheelhouse. Or you might be thinking, oh man, what have we done?
Yeah, you know, Bruce and I have done a fair amount of this type of thing where we've had to do a little suffering. So we expect some of that, and that's just part of it. But I don't think either one of us is focusing on that. I think we're focusing on we're going to be out in the wild. We're going to be in a beautiful place, and we're not going to have cars breathing down our neck daily.
One of the daily challenges Bob and I have experienced in the past is trying to agree on what we're going to paint.
Yeah.
Would you paint this? Why don't we go on a little bit further?
These are big decisions on a daily basis.
And
do you
sometimes separate when you paint? And you're painting in two entirely different places, or do you sometimes are back to back and you're painting one direction and the other guy's painting the other direction?
Both. Yeah. We sometimes we're always within eyesight, earshot of each other, but there are times where we intentionally literally sit there next to each other in our goofy little chairs, painting the same thing. But sometimes you've sat there with kind of love seat style, chairs right next to each other, but facing in opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting to look back at paintings and think, wow, those two paintings were painted in the same place, and they're just totally different. But then the ones we were painting the exact same thing, that's actually really interesting to me, because we have a very different style. We've already talked about this on this trip. I am this dull, methodical, kind of chip away at things. And Bob is much more expressive and moves with the paint fast. And it sort of befits our personalities. And it really comes out in the painting styles. And that's really interesting to look at when we're done.
Yeah, and I think it gets more pronounced as the trip goes on, too, because we'll be doing it daily. And we'll have a little more ease with it and a little more, I think we'll be more accustomed to it as we get more into the trip.
One of the low points for me every day is when we're sitting there painting. One thing that always happens is Bob is much faster than I am. So I'm getting there, and I'm finally getting kind of things rolling. It's like, okay, this isn't going to be a total disaster. And Bob's over there like, I'm done.
That's like having a meal with Bob.
I know.
I don't think anybody eats faster than Bob either. I'm looking forward to the painting tonight of the roadway and parking lot that you'll be sending us along.
Hey, you might get one.
We've done a number from cheap hotels.
Yeah. Well, it's great to know that you're out there on the road. You're heading east and heading for your destination to get started. And by this time next week when we talk, you will be on the trail. And like we talked about last week, I think the plan will be that if you can just reach out to me when you're pretty sure you're going to have a good cell signal, and I'll just find a way to get to the station and record the conversation. So Rouseville is where you begin, up on the Canadian border.
Yeah, and then we go from there towards Eureka.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of that right now. So it looks beautiful. So have a great rest of your drive, and when we talk next week, we'll find out where in the high country you happen to be.
We'll actually have something to talk about next week.
Oh, yeah, you will.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Jeff.
Safe travels, guys.
Sure. We'll talk to you next week.
That's Hoytus Interruptus for this week. We'll be back with Bruce and Bob on the road, on the trail, next week, right here on Voice of Vashon.